Everyone needs help.
Focus on preventing injuries and not just being reactive and treating them after they've already occurred.
We can't do it alone, so we go to someone we trust.
I'm here to help people. That's why I became a chiropractor in the first place.
Someone with the knowledge and care we all appreciate.
Quick fixes don't have the positive and lasting effects that we really want.
Dr. Tim Whiting is here to offer you a mix of sports and care, all wrapped into Wellness with Whiting.
Welcome here to Wellness with Whiting on WakeUpCallDT.com, your one-stop sports shop, and the free Wake Up Call DT app you can get on WakeUpCallDT.podbean.com/mobile. That's WakeUpCallDT.podbean.com/mobile. M-O-B-I-L-E. You can also get us on iTunes. The name of the show is the name of the free podcast. Search us in podcast for Wake Up Call with Dan Tortora. Wellness with Whiting is exclusive. You will not find this anywhere else around the country and the world, and that's because I have the opportunity to partner up with Dr. Tim Whiting of Stirp Chiropractic and Wellness Center here in Central New York. All your needs, phone number 315-472-7128 is the number to call for them. If it's outside of business hours, make sure you call the number anyways, no matter when you're listening right now. Because the beauty of Wellness with Whiting is you can hear it anytime on WakeUpCallDT.com, on iTunes, and on the free app. So if you're calling right now and it's outside of business hours, make sure you leave a message. They will get right back to you. Tim is great at doing that. 315-472-7128. Without further ado, this is our next episode here. We've done a few more that you'll find on the Dr. Tim Whiting Chiropractor page under the Team tab on WakeUpCallDT.com. And to start off here with our third episode, first and foremost, Tim, I know that you and I have been able to interact lately, did some Madden, got up against you, and we'll not talk about the outcome of that game, but how's everything been for you?
Pretty good. Busy with work, keeping going, trying to build every week, stay busy, so it's not bad.
When you have the job that you have, and obviously you're known as a chiropractor, but I know that you have an overall, and that's why we do the show Wellness of Whiting, you have an overall sense of wellness. How do you kind of integrate that into your daily life? When you're seeing a patient, do you try to talk to them about, you know, healthy habits with eating or exercise? I mean, do you integrate that when you're meeting with people?
Yeah, so usually people come in for pain, and that's the one thing we start. That's our main goal, getting them out of pain. Usually after a couple of visits, you get to know them a little bit better. You figure out their lifestyles, what they're doing. Sometimes just by looking at them, you know certain things about them. If they're a smoker, if they don't exercise, you can tell these things. So you start adding these once you've gotten their trust. They believe in you. They know that you're out for their good, that you're working with them. And you can start talking to them about, well, maybe we try cutting back on this, or maybe try to up your water intake this week, or maybe exercise a little bit more, you know. Yeah. It's very dependent on the person. It could be as simple as parking your car at the end of the parking lot and walking further to Wegmans than parking in the front row. Those are some little steps that we take. But
you hear that, honey? My wife does that all the time. She says the exercise is good for us. We park where I think the employees park for Wegmans.
Yeah, exactly. And it's a simple thing, just walking, getting up from your desk if you're at work every half hour and walking for 5 minutes. You know, they're saying that sitting is the new smoking. So anything, I try to get people to use standing desks at work as much as they can. So yeah, it's very dependent on each person, but I will throw tips at them and work with them whatever way we need, nutrition, exercise, and whatever else.
You're not the first person in the last couple days, and I don't believe in coincidences, so I think this is personally, you know, targeted toward people in my field. Sitting is the new smoking is this quote that you just said. I've heard it before. My wife tells me, you know, listen, you're in the studio, you're doing work, you're recording shows. I'm recording shows, editing shows, building partnerships, going through stuff on my website, social media. I'm constantly sitting somewhere with my computer doing something. For people in my field, for being in the media, what should I do? How should my typical day go if I wake up and, let's say, after having breakfast, kind of like getting myself to a point where I'm like, all right, let's go. Let's say 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. minimum, I'm spending on my computer sitting, eating by it, just working on it. I'm not really taking a break. What should I do for somebody like me who can spend 8 hours at a computer without blinking an eye? What should I be doing on a daily in that case?
Yeah, so it's tough when you have to be at the computer. Again, breaks are important. At least every hour, get up and walk around. Even if it's just for 5 minutes, walk around, do a little stretching, come back, sit down, get going. You're going to be more productive that way. They're showing you
okay.
You get in a zone when you're kind of sitting there, or you get bored at your computer for too long. So you want to get up, move around, get some blood flowing, you know, even if it's just for a couple minutes. So I would say at least every hour, preferably half hour, get up, move for a couple minutes. If you can do something away from your computer, if you're doing some recordings, walk around when you're doing it. Put on a headset. If you're on a phone call, and walk instead of sitting at your desk with the phone. You know, put your speaker, your headphones in, and walk around while you're doing it. You know, that's just going to keep you moving. Getting a standing desk is another. You can buy them online from anywhere from like $50 to $150. I mean, there are some more expensive ones. They have conversion kits, so you don't even need to get rid of your actual desk. You can just set one up that's adjustable to your height, so you can stand and work at it instead of sitting. Sitting on an exercise ball instead of a regular chair is another good tip, because it makes you engage your core, so
yeah.
You constantly have to use yourself to sit up and balance. So some little things
idea.
That you can do if you have to be at your desk, you know.
Okay.
Obviously, if you can get up and move and take a break in the afternoon for a half-hour walk or a light workout, then do that as well.
Because I think, you know, in my case, when I look around, and it's no offense to anybody in the media, it's just when I go... The bigger events that I go to, the more media that are there. And seeing the more media that are there, you're seeing more people that are overweight, that don't have great eating habits, that are sitting there. But that's the thing, is what I've seen. And that was one of the first things I said to myself when I walked in, is I said, I'm not going to be in a room of 300 people and be someone who's, you know, 30, 50, 80 pounds overweight. Because you see that a lot with media people, and I think it is because you sit and you eat and you work on the computer. But when you look at it, the statement, sitting is the new smoking, why connect it with smoking? Because I could say sitting, you know, can turn into obesity. I mean, I can see that happening with, you know, even people that I knew 3 or 4 years ago. And seeing them now, their intake's been more, they've done more work, and when I see them today, I actually worry for some of the people, because I know that they're working habits, but now they've put on another 40, 50, 70 pounds, and that concerns me. And I said, I'm never going to allow myself to be one of those people, but sitting is the new smoking. Why is it connected to smoking?
They're connecting it for the cardiovascular reason. The amount of damage that smoking does to your vessels, to your heart, the strain it puts on it, is equivalent to sitting for 8 hours straight. Your body's not processing things well. Like you said, a lot of people sit there, eat there at their computer, which a lot of times is not healthy food. It's fast food. It's convenient food.
Mm-hmm.
So things like that where it's correlated to cardiovascular health, they're finding out that, you know, non-smokers who sit at a desk all day, or maybe your blue-collar laborers that are out but smoke for 40 years, have the same cardiovascular health. And how is that possible?
Okay.
You think you're being healthy, you're not smoking, but you're not moving, you're not burning calories and stuff, so your body's still storing them.
Can it affect breathing? Have you seen that with anything? Because my breathing, I've always had allergies for it's been a very long time. I think I was diagnosed at like 14 or 15, but I've had them for a while. But even, it might even have been before that. But I've seen breathing where I don't feel like, obviously I'm not a 400-pound person. I play flag football every week. You know, I'm challenging my body in those ways. You know, not an everyday exercising, everyday running. But when I get shortness of breath, it confuses me. And I think a lot of it has to do with allergies and a lot of it with the change in weather. But can your breath be affected by sitting for 8 hours? I mean, is that possible?
It's possible in the sense that when you're sitting, you're compressing your diaphragm. You can't let your diaphragm expand as much as it needs to when you're standing upright posture. A lot of times we get poor posture. We're kind of keeled over, bent over, and you block down your stomach where your diaphragm needs to expand. You know, when you're sitting, you should feel the breathing coming through in your stomach. You should feel your stomach rising and lowering, but a lot of times we feel it in our shoulders instead. So we're putting a lot of strain on different muscles that we're not supposed to be using unless we're trying to get more air in, like when you're exercising or when you're running. So belly breathing is a technique that you want to try to use. You want to see your stomach going up and down. And that's hard when we're hunched over at a desk a lot of times with poor posture. So it would be more of a postural thing as to why that can affect it, but it sure can.
How, when you say belly breathing, it's funny because outside of broadcasting, a lot of people that follow my sports don't know this because, I mean, this is like an inner circle thing for me. And I do let people know over time, but my first and foremost passion, next to making people laugh, is music, is singing. So when I was getting trained by Amanda, which, you know, God bless her in heaven, she passed away a few years back, but I know she's singing up there with the angels now, and anybody that heard her in church knew that this woman transcended you, kind of brought you to heaven a little bit. She always tried to teach me the proper technique of breathing when you're singing. Mm-hmm. Talk about belly breathing, because, I mean, it sounds like it's similar to what she was telling me to do, but it's weird because she said you almost have to train your body to do it, and then your body does it on its own, but it was something that I wasn't doing correctly when I was singing, and she was trying to bring me through it. So, you know, to the people listening, what is belly breathing as compared to, like you said, the shoulder breathing that we're doing?
Yeah, so really your body, the main muscle it uses is your diaphragm to breathe. Your diaphragm is a muscle. You don't really control it. Your body's automatically in control of it. But you got to think of it as like a balloon. As you pull down on that diaphragm, you're expanding the lungs and letting air come into it. When that relaxes, the air comes out. So that's the mechanism you want to feel. If you're laying on your back with your knees bent, taking nice normal breaths in, again, put your hand on your stomach. You want to see your stomach come up and then go back down. That's the kind of breathing that you want to have. It takes the stress off from other muscles. When you're in exercise and when you're doing strenuous things, you feel up by your neck and in your shoulders, you'll see your shoulders kind of heaving up. Those are what are called accessory muscles of breathing. They're trying to get that last little bit of expansion out of your lungs. So when you're sitting there in your everyday life, you don't need to take up all of the volume in your lungs. You can just do it normally. But when you're exercising, your body needs to work harder to just get that extra little bit of air, and that's what your shoulder and your neck will do, will help pull up on the opposite end to open up a little bit more space. And you see that with people with emphysema that have a hard time breathing, getting air in. A lot of times they're going to have bigger muscles in their neck and hardened muscles up by their neck because they're constantly working to help get air in. So those are the kind of the two different things. So you want to be more of the belly breather. You know, there's some videos online that can train that, like laying on your back, putting your legs up against a wall or something and actually concentrating on it. Like you said, kind of reteaching yourself how to do that.
Because it's interesting to me that, and I kind of, you know, have seen this in my life, that obviously you're breathing while you're going about your life. Like you said, your body just knows to breathe. Mm-hmm. But psychologically, if you think about it too much, I think that's where people kind of hyperventilate. When you think about your breathing, you almost do that to yourself. And I've seen that with anxiety with myself, and you know, I'm sure with other people, that when you try to tell your body, no, I'm going to breathe for myself, you kind of start this like frantic. How do you get somebody out of doing something like that? Because, you know, I know personally, I've done it where when you're anxious, you try to like take over your own breathing from your body, so you kind of almost feel like you're keeping yourself from breathing for a little bit. How do you kind of talk people out of that, knowing that anxiety is very prevalent, not just with humans, but in America, it's becoming more and more prevalent that people are anxious about something because we're so fast moving.
Yeah, so it's tough, especially when it is an actual condition like anxiety or depression, when people get in their own own heads about it. So you really got to talk them down. What happens is they think that they're not getting enough air in. So they're panicking that they're not getting enough oxygen. So the more breaths I take, the more oxygen I'm going to get. That's what's going on in their head. Right. When in reality, they're two short, shallow breaths where you're not really getting anything in. You're not having time to process that. So you want to kind of teach them calming techniques, relaxing techniques, whether it be pressure points on the ears, whether it just be kind of laying down and focusing on your breathing, but in a different way, the classic in through your nose, out through your mouth type of thing, meditation techniques, yeah. Just to refocus on that, make sure that you are taking those slower, deeper breaths in and out, and that will have a natural calming effect as your body starts getting some more oxygen to it.
In the society that we live in America, I feel like, at least for my brain, when you feel like, and it is that feeling like, oh, there's not enough oxygen up there, when you're starting to feel like that strenuous, I feel like the best thing to do is to sit in silence, breathe, become one with your body again, and then go attack it. But our society is so like, go, 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 go. How hard is it, do you think, for people now to stop in America for 5 minutes? Because I feel like people go into, like, they're panic-stricken if you tell them, don't touch your phone for 5 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, it's really hard. You see, like I said on a previous show, it's everything we expect it to happen now. We're in it's a society where it needs to get done. Everything's at my fingertips. And so you've got a phone, you've got a computer, you've got this and that in front of you. So, and they're all worried about deadlines. Like, I got to get this done. I've got to have this done. If I take 5 minutes away, then it's 5 minutes I could have been working, had this done. But in reality, you need to do it for your own health. It'd be more productive if you do take those 5 minutes to get up, walk away from whatever you're doing. It's 5 minutes in the long term of things. Come back down, you'll have 10 more minutes of productive working instead of 5 of panicking and then 5 of working. Like, it will equal out in the long run if you actually just take the time to get up, let your mind go for a minute. You know, whatever it is. If it is taking a walk, if it's working on breathing, if it's stretching, listening to music, calming music, you got to find your own thing that helps you get back to normal and reset everything.
Your release.
Yeah.
You know, when I was growing up, my dad, you know, the mentality of my dad's generation was put a punching bag in the basement, hit it a few times, feel good. Or, you know, my dad did aerobics. My dad, you know, lifted weights and whatnot. My mom was huge on, and I'll never forget it, back when this was okay to do, apparently, Richard Simmons had a video where he shot, like, a real gun shot off in the beginning, and then there was Richard in his in an awesome get-up. But my mom would watch it just for the aerobics of it, you know, just for the feeling of doing that. Tai Bo was big for a while. Now it's P90X and all that stuff. So, you know, I feel like there's different things that people have seen, but you can kind of trick your body into doing it. I love playing basketball. I love playing football. I can't tell you how many miles I run every week playing flag football for 3 hours. Mm-hmm. But if you put me on a track,
right,
I'd go like 5 steps and be like, all right, give me a Snickers, like I'm out. So, right. But so it's almost like, and I feel like this goes for a lot of people, like you said, find something that you appreciate. Find something where you can almost trick your body into enjoying it. Mm-hmm. Because when people think, when you say exercise to somebody, you always get that face, like, yeah, okay. But if you say to your buddy, like, let's go play basketball. You know, if you want to go play flag football, if you're dancing at a club, you're burning calories, but you're doing it in such a way where your mind has been trained by you to think, dancing is fun, football is fun, basketball is fun, running on the treadmill to my music is fun, so it's not exercise.
Right.
And I think that's almost what we have to do in our society, is just build into your day something that is fun for you,
right,
that will bring you away from your work for 5 minutes.
Yeah, and that's totally right. You got to find out what's your, like we said, what's your release, what's your calming factor. You know, exercise is important, but again, you got to find something that doesn't feel like exercise. You don't want to dread every minute of being on a treadmill. Then don't get on a treadmill. Yeah. Go walk a trail outside. Go hike. You know, walk through the woods and pick, like, you know, like during hunting season that's coming up right now, going through and looking at different spots in the woods and stuff is fun. Looking at different tracks. Go and play with your kid in the yard. Raking leaves is exercise, something you need to do anyways. So, you know, do it maybe a little bit faster pace or something. You know, find anything just to get moving, really, is the big thing. I don't care if it's just walking. Again, they're finding 30 minutes of walking versus 10 minutes of running is just as beneficial. So yeah, why not just do that and get out and do something?
That coming from Dr. Tim Whiting. We're here on Wellness with Whiting with Tim and myself, Dan Tortora. We'll take a step aside. When we come back, we are going to go throughout the injuries that are affecting the teams that you care and love around the country, NFL, fantasy football. If you're a fantasy football player, you will care about the next segment. If you love the NFL, you'll care about the next segment. If you love your body and care about your health, you'll love the next segment. That's all coming up here on Wellness with Whiting with Dr. Tim Whiting of Stirp Chiropractic and Wellness Center. Call them anytime. If it's outside of business hours, leave a message. 315-472-7128. We'll be back here in just a moment.
This is Dr. Tim Whiting of Stirp Chiropractic and Wellness Center. Here at Stirp Chiropractic, we strive to provide our patients with the highest quality of care in a comforting and welcoming atmosphere. We are not simply pain doctors. We spend time looking at the whole body and address each patient's needs and goals. This usually includes chiropractic adjustments, muscle work, and tips on nutrition and supplementation that fits each patient's needs. We want to develop a plan that promotes overall health and wellness and focuses on future injury prevention. Our office is located at 1628 West Genesee Street in Syracuse. Please give us a call at 315-472-7128 with any of your chiropractic or wellness needs.
Back here on Wellness with Whiting with myself, Dan Tortora, alongside Dr. Tim Whiting of Stirp Chiropractic and Wellness Center. Tim, 315-472-7128 is the way, is 7128. 315-472-7128 is how you reach Tim anytime. Make sure that you call that number and let Tim know that you heard about it on the show, Wellness with Whiting. If you need help, do not wait. This is the thing, and I know this from experience, and I know this from my own stubbornness sometimes. If you have a problem with your body, we think, as stubborn human beings, that the longer we wait, it'll eventually go away. But sometimes things go away. Other times, the longer we wait, the worse it gets, and we have backed ourselves into a corner that's a lot harder to get out of. So if your neck's hurting, if your back's hurting, if your body's hurting, if something is going on with you that has been reoccurring, that hasn't gone away, instead of being stubborn, instead of, and I can tell you personally, saying, whatever, it'll just get better, go to Tim. When I throw, you know, I play flag football, I play quarterback. It's an honor for me and a privilege to do that. I am not trained as an NFL player to play quarterback, but I could throw the ball, I trust myself, my team trusts me. It is exercise that is fun for me. It's something I love, it's something that I care about, like we were talking about in the last segment. I love it, so I do it. It helps my body, it helps me feel good about myself. But when my arm started hurting, my throwing arm, and I started to feel like a pinched nerve, and I could feel something in my pinky, and it was running down my arm, and then my elbow was hurting, I went to Tim. I asked him what I should do. I said, is it serious? Should I come in to do this? Are there exercises I can work on? And because of Dr. Tim Whiting, my body feels better today, completely honest, than it did 3 weeks ago. Do I still have my moments when I throw the ball? Do I still have those times where I have to step aside and say, you know what? Why don't you throw for this series? Because I'm feeling it in my arm a little bit. But if it wasn't for Tim giving me an exercise to do, I wouldn't have had something that I did on the field numerous times a week after talking with Dr. Tim Whiting that I would press down on my nerve and I would move my hand around and I could feel it loosening up to the point where I was able to continue to throw, be successful, get some drives going. And so without Dr. Tim Whiting, my team wouldn't have touchdowns. That's something that means something to me. It should mean something to you as well. 315-472-7128. Don't wait. Just call. 315-472-7128. I see way too many people that just allow their injuries to continue. And for the good of yourself, and not only for you, if you're not going to care about yourself, care about the people that love you. I've seen my own father go through a lot of back problems, and I know how stubborn he is. But he is here today, and relatively in good health today. He has some moments with his back, but I wouldn't want him to wait, so I wouldn't want you to wait, or your dad, or your mom, or your girlfriend, boyfriend, brother, sister, best friend. So make sure you get to Tim Whiting. We are here talking about injuries going on around the league. It's a special for all our fantasy football people around the country. I know you care about injuries, and you look at an injury sheet, and you look at who's out, who's doubtful, who's questionable. But questionable on the depth chart used to mean, when I was a kid and I started playing fantasy football, questionable meant likely not going to play. Questionable today in the world that we live in is an extremely gray area that's getting more and more gray. So I think it's important to have Dr. Tim Whiting on the show for fantasy football owners, for people who have an NFL team, for sports lovers and enthusiasts that have followed me for a very long time, over a decade, to hear this segment, because when you see questionable, if it's Percy Harvin and he's my favorite wide receiver, questionable 5 years ago is not what it means today. Questionable for Rob Gronkowski is not what it is for Percy Harvin. And injuries have a lot to do with it. So I think to make the depth chart and the injury report interactive is why I brought Tim on to talk about this. And one thing we're going to talk about is a concussion. You see concussion, and if it happens on a Sunday, there's been some guys that they say they're questionable for the next week. Other players are out, as we can see on the chart right now, with Eugene Monroe, offensive tackle, out with a concussion for the Baltimore Ravens. When we looked at, a couple weeks ago, the injury report, concussion said, well, they're questionable to play. What would make a concussion, Tim, questionable to out? Are there levels of concussion?
Yeah.
You know, something that a lot of people don't know. You think concussion, okay, well, you know, obviously they're going to be out. But obviously some guys take 3 days. Some guys take 2 weeks.
So. Right. And so now with the new rules on concussions and the doctors being a little bit more cautious, you're more likely to see them out for at least the rest of that game and into the next week. There are different levels of it, and a lot of it's based off of how they're feeling. You know, do they have pain? Do they have headaches? Do they have dizziness? Is their vision okay? Are they feeling sick to their stomach? Are they nauseous at all? Those are some of the big ones you're looking at, as well as cognitive function, because physically they may be fine. They may be able to stand there in front of you, pass all of your tests that you're doing, their balance tests. They can run without an issue. But they have a new cognitive test that you have to take preseason, and then after you get hit in the head, there's these new programs out that will test your brain and speed of how you react to things on a computer. And then you have to take this after you get hit in the head. And if they see a decline in that, they're saying something's off. Your brain's not firing like it was when it was healthy. And so we don't think you should return to the field. So that's one of the new tools that they're using that might be holding some of these people out, where physically they appear fine, but cognitively, you know, mentally, they're still a little bit foggy. Something's going on that we don't think they're fully healed yet. Because it's a contusion, just like you can have it on your arm, it's a contusion in your brain. Your brain slides back and forth, side to side, and hits up against your head, and it kind of gets a little bruised to it, and it needs to heal, and they need to figure out the extent of that damage. And it's hard with imaging, you really can't see very much, so a lot of it comes down to testing.
When you look at, in a case of, you know, Syracuse tight end who's just come over, Trey Dunkelberger, he suffered a concussion, but he played in the first game for Syracuse, has been out for a couple weeks now. Now, working to get back and going through the process, the last time he had a concussion, knowing Trey, you know, and knowing him before he came to Syracuse, the last time he had a concussion was, as I believe, a sophomore in high school. So from a sophomore in high school, he's got sophomore year, junior year, senior year. He goes to play 1 year of junior college, and now he's at Syracuse. So we're talking about multiple years in between concussions, but the protocol was to keep him out for a couple weeks. What is going on in this situation that he's only had two, and he's had them over a span of 4 or 5 years? What would keep a guy out for a couple weeks knowing that there was two concussions, but it's been almost a half decade?
Yeah, again, it could be looking at him personally. It might have been a cognitive thing, or maybe he was having some problem focusing, so the second one might have been a little bit more severe. But what they are finding is the more and more concussions you have, it takes less and less to make it a more severe one the next time around. So after your second, third, fourth one, they're finding out that you might have decent damage in there. And it's
even if it's like 4 or 5 years in between.
Yeah, even if it's in between, they're finding out that just repetitive ones, they are not healing as well, and you're more prone to further injuries and further concussions. You look at somebody like Aikman and Bledsoe and how many they've got over the years. Yeah. And the worry is now, later on in life, what are the effects? And we're seeing a lot of things coming out in the medical literature about the biopsies on the brains and seeing the in-depth damage and basically atrophy. Your brain is shrinking and they're losing function as they age. So it's kind of a worrying thing for people, especially for parents to watch their kids go through. And they're just taking caution. They don't, unfortunately, an 18, 20-year-old kid has multiple concussions already and he hasn't even played throughout all of college or into the pros. If he makes it, you know, there's a lot of time for things to happen, and they're just going to take their time with it and make sure he's 100% before they put him on the field.
Going through the fact that a lot of concussions, you know, and Syracuse has been through over the years numerous ones where concussions are happening not in a game, but they're happening in practice. They're happening from, you know, a helmet to helmet, an honest mistake. What can you say about, you know, maybe how teams are practicing? The fact that, you know, Kyle Knapp, who is a former offensive lineman for Syracuse, he had gotten multiple concussions. I think the last one he got was during practice. Trey Dunkelberger during practice. When that happens, what's going on in that aspect? Because it's not necessarily the full speed of the game the whole time, but what can you say to that? I mean, are you seeing anything, or is there anything that can be done to try and prevent this? Because parents are worried about their kids in a game, and now parents are worried about their kids in practice.
Yeah, so they're finding it's not necessarily the big hits that are the only things giving people concussions. That's what it was thought before. And yes, they do still give the majority of the concussions that we're worried about, those big helmet-to-helmet, helmet-to-ground, whatever it is, and you see heads bouncing off each other. But especially with linemen, tight ends, the people in the trenches, they're butting heads, you know, maybe not at full speed all the time, but right off the line, constantly, play after play. And so it's those little things that they're finding, that repetitive trauma, that just like if you had a repetitive use issue in your shoulder, you can have that same thing with your brain, unfortunately. It just gets batted back and forth that little bit every time. And without going to non-contact practices, there's really not much you can do. You see a lot of them wearing those red caps that are on those helmets now in practice. They've got a little bit more padding, so you're not plastic on plastic. They're trying to give themselves that little bit more cushion that they can. Unfortunately, helmets weren't meant to prevent concussions. It's not why they were brought into the game. They were brought into the game to protect your skull from breaking, and that's what they're for. A lot more has gone into them now. They're finding different ways to use air pockets and cushions and whatever to take on some of that force. But unfortunately, it has to be transmitted through into the head still. It's going to happen no matter how many pads they put in that. That helmet is still going to hit up against your head. Some of the biggest things I see that I cringe at is when players aren't wearing mouth guards. you imagine your mouth's just a little bit open, you get hit on the head, that last little clenching is going to jar you a little bit more. So I think mouth guards are a huge issue that they should be wearing all times, every play, during practice, during the game, and as well as making sure that they have a nice tight-fitting chin strap. Any way you can keep everything tight from your chin up is going to help that from jarring around a little bit. So those are two things I think that they should make sure that they're doing. I know it's not cool to wear a mouth guard for some reason, but yeah. Unfortunately, if it can prevent a concussion, I would wear it.
And yeah, it's funny to me that, you know, in football, to wear a mouth guard or, you know, have your chin strap on or something like that, it is more a fashion choice than people treat it as an actual, you need it. It yeah. has to be there.
Yeah, I don't know where that came from, but you'll see people going through plays with two of their straps on their chin strap undone. It doesn't make any sense to me. I think it's just slipped through and people let it happen. People let them do whatever they want on the fields, but those are two big things that I would start with. And not just football, you're talking regular sports that don't have helmets. You know, soccer, you see a lot of concussions in soccer with them heading the ball, hitting into each other. Mouth guards are huge in that aspect of it. They are a little bit more cautious with head-to-head stuff because they know they don't have that protection. And I think that's another thing. The helmet builds in this false sense of security that I'm protected from getting this, when in fact, again, like I said, it's just protecting you from breaking your skull, from cracking that. It's not against a concussion. So I think a little bit more education is going on now than there was before. So we'll see with the upcoming years.
When we're looking at it right now in studio, Syracuse's protective helmet, the black padded helmet that all the way around has you know, pieces to it. These are supposed to help prevent the blow a little bit. Syracuse has been using it for a couple years now. They use it this season. I believe they used it in the last camp. What can you say about, you know, seeing a helmet like this that, you know, it's a padding that fits around the outside of a helmet, but Syracuse has been seen with these a lot. And now they've still had concussion, and I'm not in every practice. You know, media is not allowed to see a lot of what goes on in practice. You don't know if these are worn the whole time, and you don't know if they were worn the day of. But what can you say about a padding like this and how the outside of the helmet is now being more padded in? I mean, it should it be the opposite? Or, I mean, is this something that you see as helpful?
No, it's definitely helpful. Anything you can have to absorb force, that's what you're trying to limit. The force that goes from the outside into the inside. Yes, the cushions inside are good because they have a little give, so they're not going to press into your head as much. But this also adds you that extra level from, again, that plastic on plastic that can be quite shocking when you get hit. This has another level to take up that force, and that's what we're trying to limit. Unfortunately, the force still has to go somewhere, and it's going to go from your head all the way to your toes. In some form or another. So you're still going to get that, but any level of something you can do to help absorb some of that force is good. But the problem is you're still going to hit face masks. You're still going to have repetitive minor stresses that can lead to concussions.
Outside of concussions, we're seeing knee injuries that obviously, you know, happen in the sport of football and in the NFL. Breshad Perriman, you know, people expected a lot of things out of this young wide receiver. He was out a week prior and is now out again with his knee injury. What type of knee injuries? Because there's a lot of things. When they say knee, I mean, we could be talking about ACL, PCL. We could talk about meniscus. There's, you know, some things torn. There's so many different. Could be the kneecap itself. It could. There's a lot of. I mean, it could be fluid on the knee. There's so many different. When you see knee injury, you know, I think, you know, a lot of fans look at it, and like I said, they just look at the status. Oh, okay, they're out, whatever. But I think it's important to know the multiple knee injuries to understand your team and your favorite players. You know, if I have Breshad Perriman on my team, and he's supposed to be one of my best wide receivers, should I drop him today, or should I keep him based on his knee injury? So what are some types of knee injuries that when we see knee and we see somebody's out or someone's questionable in the case of Cortez Allen, a cornerback for Pittsburgh, what are we looking at when we're seeing knee injury and how, what type of injury should people be concerned about when you have that player?
Yeah, again, the big words we talked about last week are ACL, MCLs. Those are a lot of your stabilizers to your knee, the ligaments that you're looking at. You had Victor Cruz, who had a ruptured patellar tendon. That's technically a knee issue, a quad issue. Yeah. There's so many different variables. Teams are going to limit what they want you to see, so they'll just list knee in general. It could be a bruise. They could have got hit in practice by a helmet, you know, so it could be a minor contusion. So what you're looking for are maybe bruises, contusions, strains. Those would be lesser things, more muscular, and more like a bruise kind of thing. And so I would keep those people because it could be a day-to-day, a week-to-week kind of thing, but they should be back. It's really the sprain that you're looking for, and those are the ligaments. Those are like what just happened to Big Ben with that MCL. That's a big sprain on the inside of his knee. It's a very big stabilizer, and as they're saying, they want to make sure that's healed 100%, because if it's not, you're putting the rest of the knee at risk with the ACL, with the PCL and things. So it's really the sprain that I would be concerned about in some of these people, and if you want to hold on to them for a couple weeks and see what happens, you know, or look more into their injuries and see if you can find what's actually going on. But again, bruises and sprains, bruises and strains are not bad, but the sprain is the one that I'm looking for, more of the ligament stuff.
When you look at Ben Roethlisberger, you know, Pittsburgh Steelers starting quarterback, as we watch the video right now again, you know, a lot of these leg and knee injuries, you see it in slow motion when somebody gets hit low and the knee bends when it wasn't supposed to. You know, it bent, like, or you see it bend back, you see somebody go forward. I mean, I think in Jamal Anderson, who used to play running back for the Atlanta Falcons, his injury, he got his cleat stuck in the turf, and so his leg wanted to move forward, but it pulled the bottom half, and that's where you saw the torn ACL, is that it stopped him, and his leg was trying to go one place, and the rest of the body was kind of holding it. But in the case of a quarterback, we see that a lot, is they'll get hit behind the knee, and you'll see that hit go down, or you'll see the knee bend sideways with the leg trying to go forward. How dangerous are these low hits? Because we hear, you know, the NFL trying to get rid of the helmet to helmet and college football targeting and all that. But how dangerous are these hits that are going at the knee and, you know, going right at the bend of the leg? How dangerous are these for players?
You know, less dangerous than a helmet to helmet hit for sure. You know, and the problem in football is you got to tackle somebody. You know, they're telling them they can't go high, so they go low. Now if they tell them they can't go low, what are you only going to have body shots? And that's, you know, that's not really possible. So as far as would I rather have them hitting the head or hitting the knee, unfortunately, I'd say go for the lower part of the body. You got to take them down. It was an accident what happened with Big Ben, too. It wasn't like he was targeting him. I don't think any players want to target somebody like that because they know that it could be a career-ending thing if they do blow their knee out completely.
Right.
And players don't want to do that. They're not out there for the most part to do that. So it is dangerous, but I would say it's less dangerous than going for the head.
John Brown, another injury I want to talk about, Arizona Cardinals wide receiver. With Arizona's offense being so fiery and being so strong, and obviously Larry Fitzgerald had a good time this past week against 49ers. But to look at John Brown's injury, he has a shoulder injury that puts him out as questionable. We haven't talked about the shoulder yet. What are some things we're looking at with the shoulder that would prevent a wide receiver from being able? I mean, obviously they got to put their hands up, catch the ball, whatnot. But what are we looking at with the shoulder that could be detrimental to a wide receiver?
Yeah, so you talk about your rotator cuff, and that gets thrown, that word gets thrown out there a lot. But there are multiple muscles involved with this rotator cuff, and there are over 17 muscles that actually attach to and around the shoulder that help with the movement. Four big ones for the actual, what they call the rotator cuff. So when an injury to one of those muscles, one of those tendons occurs, you have to grade the severity of it. Is it just a minor sprain? Is it a tear that's going to require surgery? Which, like him, obviously it's not. So he's probably got some limited range of motion, some pain right now, that if he can work through, he'll probably be okay. What they're looking for is to make sure that he's out of pain. They want you to have a pain-free practice before they're really going to allow you to go on with everything. Because otherwise, if you have pain, that means something's wrong. Something's not going properly. Your body's telling you that it's an improper motion or something's happened. So they don't want you to keep doing that under pain and lead to further damage. So really, rotator cuff's the big one you're looking at, as well as your AC joint is right there on your shoulder, your clavicles in that area, which is part of your AC joint. And then the bones themselves, it would have said dislocation or something if that happened. But those are possible in football if you get hit properly too. And then you're still your typical bruises and things that could happen to the muscles.
When we look at injuries with wide receivers, and we kind of look at where things stand with them, last year, Roddy White had a problem with, you know, ankle, you know, foot area. He had a problem with the lowest part of his body. The same case, Julio Jones, who has, you know, a little toe issue now too. But last year, the Atlanta Falcons came out in the season. Roddy White's got a problem with his lower body from ankle down. Julio Jones got a problem ankle down. Now, we saw last year that when it was a leg issue, an ankle issue, a toe issue with Julio Jones and Roddy White, Atlanta said, play him, play him, play him, play him, play him. By week two, week four, whatever, the more these guys played, the more happy fantasy football fans were, the happier they were. But I said, having one of the guys on my team, I said, listen, if a guy's questionable and he has a nagging injury, especially a wide receiver, and we're dealing with the ankle, the toe, the leg, whatever, that we need to, or anybody in football, I kept looking at Julio Jones and Roddy White, and I said, as much as I don't want to not have them this week, I almost want to take a hit for this week, get them in the doctors, have them do some training, some rehab, figure out what's wrong, get them better. I'd rather lose them for 3 weeks than lose them for the season. By week four, these guys were hurting, and then eventually you lose them for the whole year. What can you say about the Atlanta Falcons' decision to say two guys that have injuries, you know, when we're talking about ankle, foot, leg, knee, when we're talking about those types of injuries, the fact that they played them for so long, and I mean, I'm sure the guys wanted to play too, but the fact that they played them on the field for 3-4 weeks after injury, what does that do for the player, and what can you say about an organization using the Falcons as an example, putting a guy out there? Because the immediate, and like we said before, Americans want an immediate satisfaction, but long-term, Roddy White and Julio Jones were affected last year, and Julio is affected again this year.
From the doctor's point of view, for me, it would be to keep them on the sidelines until they're 100%. If there's something going on still, and you're going to keep aggravating it, you're injuring it more and more in long-term, just like what happened with them. And then they have a bigger injury coming out. So as a doctor and the trainer, they're probably looking at it saying, yeah, he should be out. But unfortunately, when you're in the NFL and you come the higher ups that control all the money from the bottom down and the coaches that need them to play for that game to win that game, you as a doctor may get overruled. You can say, my opinion is he should sit for 3 weeks, and they're going to come to you and say, well, unfortunately, money and contract says that right. He needs to do this, and so he's going to play. And sometimes the players will lie. We said it last week. They'll tell you, I'm feeling fine. I'm good. I'm good enough. Like, it's okay. And they'll go out and play on a hurt foot because they want to play. That's what they're doing. That's their career. They're not going to let a sore foot to them keep them out. So it's very difficult. You have a lot of things to deal with, a lot of factors to deal with, but it does come down to, like we said last week, money a lot of the times and trying to get that win. Personally, I would say keep them out until they're 80 to 100%.
What do you do in a situation before we take our next step aside here on Wellness with Whiting, Dr. Tim Whiting of Stirrup Chiropractic and Wellness Center in Central New York, myself, Dan Tortora, here exclusively on WakeUpCallDT.com, the free Wake Up Call DT app, and Wake Up Call with Dan Tortora on the free iTunes podcast. In the case of Julio Jones and Roddy White, when they're your moneymakers, when without them you don't have much of anything, they don't have Harry Douglas anymore, either as a backup, Justin Hardy has been injured and he's low on the depth chart too. So for the Atlanta Falcons, this offense has run through. Can Matty Ice, Mr. Matt Ryan, can he get it to Roddy? Can he get it to Julio? And from there, these are the big guys. These are the big-time players. How do you handle a situation like that? Because, like you said, there's money involved. You know, the offense, when an offense runs through these two people, I think it's forgotten that eventually, if they're not already, they're fathers, they're husbands, they'll be grandparents someday, and they're human beings who need to be able to walk in 10 years, 20. I mean, to know somebody would have problems walking at the age of 30 when they're done playing in the NFL seems insane, but in the case of Roddy White and Julio Jones, not so insane. How do we handle this as a society moving forward, knowing that there's money behind it, there's wins behind it, but at the same time, the Atlanta Falcons, as an example, pushed their two best players a year ago and lost them both?
It's going to be about education. Unfortunately, as far as it goes for us as fans, we're going to sit and watch what happens. They're going to hide a lot of things from us. You're not really going to know. But it's going to come down to the doctors, the trainers, educating the players, making sure that they know, you know, the higher officials in the NFL making these rules. I mean, it's happened with concussions already. Before, it used to be you get blasted in the head, you're back out on the field later. We don't care about, you know, if you're dizzy or whatever, can you play?
Yeah.
They've clamped down on that, and that was a big one for them. But you're going to see it more with injuries coming. They're going to be more cautious about things because, unfortunately, NFL players are coming back and trying to sue the NFL for all these things that they suffered. Yes, they did sign on a contract with them that to play, but if they're injured, they shouldn't be forced. There shouldn't be penalties for that. And that's what I think we're seeing still. They're afraid of getting penalized. They're afraid of missing games. So until that's taken care of and their health is a priority, we're going to see it keep going. But it's going to get better. It has gotten better already. Every year it's going to. So I guess for us, we'll just have to wait and see and make sure that the education throughout the league gets better.
And that coming from Dr. Tim Whiting here on Wellness with Whiting. Julio Jones, Roddy White, always big in fantasy football, at least for now. Hopefully the team will handle them right this time around. This is Dan Tortora. We'll take a step aside here on Wellness with Whiting, and we'll be back at it talking about the players you love from the teams that you love in the country that you love coming up next here on Wellness with Whiting.
Hi, this is Dr. Tim Whiting with your tip of the week. Today we're talking ankle sprains. As an athlete, or even the common weekend warrior, I'm sure you've experienced an ankle sprain at some point in your life. These injuries tend to become very troublesome and reoccur often. From my experience, ankle sprains are due to weak muscles of the feet and ankles, whether from poor training, poor rehab, or lack of rehab following an injury. One of my former instructors was a huge advocate for foot drills, both before and after training. For more tips and info, or the link to the YouTube video showing these foot drills, look for my link on wakeupcalldt.com. This is Dr. Tim Whiting of Sterp Chiropractic and Wellness Center. Here at Sterp Chiropractic, we strive to provide our patients with the highest quality of care in a comforting and welcoming atmosphere. We are not simply pain doctors. We spend time looking at the whole body and address each patient's needs and goals. This usually includes chiropractic adjustments, muscle work, and tips on nutrition and supplementation that fits each patient's needs. We want to develop a plan that promotes overall health and wellness and focuses on future injury prevention. Our office is located at 1628 West Genesee Street in Syracuse. Please give us a call at 315-472-7128 with any of your chiropractic or wellness needs.
Welcome back here to Wellness with Whiting on wakeupcalldt.com, the free Wake Up Call DT app that you can get on wakeupcalldt.podbean.com/mobile. That's wakeupcalldt.podbean, podbean.com/mobile. And on iTunes, go to the podcast section of iTunes and look up Wake Up Call with Dan Tortora. You can get it there as well. If you own an iPhone, iPad, iPod, you have the opportunity to get straight to iTunes to get to the podcast, and you have it's very easy. I have an iPhone myself, and it makes it stupidly easy for people to be able to see whenever a new podcast, when a new show is launched, when Wellness with Whiting is on again, all the shows that we do. You're able to download it. You can save it for later. You can pick your favorites. It will update you and let you know how many new shows air on that as well. And the great thing about the app is it takes up little to no space on your device, and the Wake Up Call DT free app will update itself, and it'll put the newest show on top, dating all the way back to the first one aired. And right now, sitting comfortably at over 550 shows on there. So plenty of you to go back and listen to, as well as Wellness with Whiting, as I sit here today with Dr. Tim Whiting of Stirp Chiropractic and Wellness Center in studio. 315-472-7128 is the number to call to get in touch with Tim. If you have a nagging issue, do not wait on this. People playing my flag football league had a nagging issue that turned into a second issue, that turned into a third issue, that turned back into the first issue. The time to call was 3 days ago. 315-472-7128 is the number to call. We're looking around the league doing something for the people that we love out there for fantasy football and the people that love the NFL, people that like football in general or sports in general. This is a special segment to make the depth chart and the injury report a lot more interactive for fans outside of just literally looking at who's in and who's out, to give you an opportunity to know about these injuries, why people are out, how things can happen so quickly, how someone can get back from a concussion in 8 days as opposed to 3 weeks, or how a calf injury for one is different than the other, and how a hamstring injury might be just as nagging and as you know, frustrating as an ACL injury with some of these running backs that are out there. So Dr. Tim Whiting has given us the opportunity to lend his expertise, and I thank him for that as we continue looking around the NFL. 32 teams, plenty of players, and to all of the owners, the 50-plus in the Wake Up Call Fantasy Football Challenge, I thank you for all that you've done. Shout out to the Florida League, 6 years old, the National League with former players that are in it that is around the country, and the Syracuse League that started at 1, went to 2, and is now comfortably at 4 that continue to grow within themselves. So thank you to all of my fantasy football people and all my trash talkers out there. Feed it. I love it. I'll eat it for breakfast, and I'll beat you by dinner. So, on the field, that is, okay? No Ted Turner beat you here. So, Crockett Gilmore is a player that I want to talk about here, and I feel like we just went from Lifetime back to football. But Crockett Gilmore, tight end, he had a calf injury for the Baltimore Ravens. And I want to talk about how quickly things happen. Crockett Gilmore has a calf injury. He's questionable. Later in the day, he's doubtful. By the next day, he's out. What is it with your calf that, you know, players should be concerned about, fantasy football owners and sports fans in general should be a little concerned about, when you see a calf injury so quickly go from 50-50 he'll play to he's not going to play at all?
So you're looking at their symptoms as they progress through. At first, you might have a little bit of pain, some spasm or something. As the day goes on, there might be more swelling, more pain. Maybe he could lightly jog at first, and now he can barely walk without any pain. Things do progress. As the injury is going through its process, you get more inflammation in the area. It can cause more and more pain, more pressure. So over the first couple days, you're really going to see that. Usually within the first 24 to 48 hours, you'll see the progression of that injury to where it's going to be the most severe. And how much did he do between that time? Did they have him running because they thought he could? Did they have him, you know, not doing any therapy because they thought it was very mild? You know, so it depends on how quickly they got on that. Or maybe they went for more imaging and found, like, hey, we actually have a decent tear in the calf, where they thought maybe it was just a strain of the muscle before.
Yeah.
So things like that, as they progress through the lines of the medical personnel and maybe further testing and imaging, you'll see at first they're going to put up, he's questionable, well, now he's doubtful. Well, never mind, he's out for this week. There's no way he's going to be able to play.
Same in the case of Sammy Watkins, too, yeah. Wide receiver for the Bills, saying that, you know, his calf injury has him unlikely to play as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so again, it depends on severity, really. And calves with receivers, with anybody, I mean, they're constantly running, trying to push off, jumping. It's a very important muscle, and it's hard to run normally, let alone walk, when you've got that nagging calf injury.
When you look at, you know, people that play fantasy football to actual players in the NFL to flag football, you know, when we're paying attention fantasy football-wise at these players, or we're physically playing on the field ourselves, like in my case with flag football, and you've played in the league before too, they call it the Charlie horse. When you get that, you know, your muscle tightens up, you feel like you can't do anything with it. It feels like someone's squeezing your muscle or injecting something into you, but at the same time, you can't do anything with your leg, and it kind of freezes you in spot for a little bit. what can you do to work out some of that stuff? Because, you know, while we're talking on the calf, there's been times where, you know, I'll do something very simple and, you know, you feel that strain or that pull or something. What is it with the calf that kind of debilitates you, you know, even if it's for a short amount of time, that feeling where it just feels like someone is grabbing your muscle and they're not letting go?
Yeah, so what happens, that's a spasm, a Charlie horse, a cramp, a spasm.
But they can last a long time.
They can. They'll say Charlie horse in there, but Charlie horse is more of, I think, a muscle contusion is what they're talking about when they're putting it on here. Like it got hit, like if you got punched in the leg, they used to yell Charlie horse or something like that. Yeah. That's more what they're talking about. So depending on the terminology they're using, if they're talking about that squeezing, that grabbing feeling of the spasm, those are usually shorter lived. And we talked about last episode more of a dehydration issue or a nutritional issue that can be addressed because your legs are constantly working. That's why you feel them just as an everyday person will randomly get that foot or calf cramp.
If you feel that in your calf, what is the, you know, some people will say drink water, some people are like, go stretch it, but you know, like, it'll kind of, when someone says go stretch it, you almost feel like your leg's locked up and you don't know what to do, kind of like I said, you're frozen in bed, so to speak, because, you know, sometimes just by stretching in bed it'll happen. What is the immediate best thing to do? Is it to drink water? I mean, is that when you feel that in your calf, or what would you suggest?
I mean, getting proper hydration is definitely what you're going to aim for, because that's probably what's causing that. Right then and there, drinking a glass of water is not going to make it go away automatically. The thing you don't want to do, which is what they tell you all the time, is stretch it, because that's actually... A spasm is responding to what it thought was already an overstretched muscle. Okay. There's sensory organs in your muscles that are to prevent it from getting stretched too far. And that's what happens. They think it got stretched too much, and so they signal to cramp it, to lock it down, so it shortens it. Right. So now it's stuck in a shortened position. The last thing you want to do is try to stretch that out, because you're just going to keep that spasm going. So you really kind of just like want to let it go. Maybe go the opposite way of stretching it. It would be more to kind of point your toe down to the ground, so to speak, to shorten that muscle a little bit more. Or simple just touching, kind of like squeezing of the muscle around, will help calm that down to help relax that spasm a little
bit. Some people, and I know that this is not the medical way to do it just by what I'm about to say, but some people will say that when you have a cramp in your leg, to just throw it against the wall.
Punch it.
Or punch it as hard as you can. Where did this... I'm sure... Random crazy theories have worked for some people at one point, but when you feel that grab of your calf, and you know, and you see people kind of like spaz out, they freak out, and they're trying to move their leg and do different things. Where did this throw it against the wall or punch it? Where does that come from?
So it somewhat has anatomical sense to it. So the receptors that we're talking about that are responding to the overstretch are at locations at the very ends of the muscle, so by your knee and by your heel. So that's where those sensors are, and they're responding and making that reaction happen. By hitting it or throwing it against a wall in the belly of the muscle, the meat of the muscle, there's actually different receptors in there. Those are your muscle spindles, they're called. And if those get turned on or excited, then the opposite effect is going to happen, where the muscle is going to try to relax and lengthen. So that's what... If there was anything where it actually worked for you, that's probably what it was. Like I'm saying, to kind of squeeze it. And if I had something to show you, it'd be like kind of pinching the muscle towards itself, because those are calming those muscle spindles down to let that muscle relax. So yes, can it happen? Can it work for you? Sure, I don't recommend punching yourself in the calf or the quad or anything, but I'm sure it's worked for some people out there. So I get why it's worked, you know.
It's just, to me, it feels like whenever there's a tightness in my calf, you know, and not just with me, but you see it with people freak, you know, like, your first thing to do is, like, kind of, like make your body spasm on your own type of thing, where you're just kind of, like, throwing your leg around, you're trying to walk, you're trying to move it, you're shaking it and whatnot.
It's that feeling of you're not in control anymore. And
you feel almost powerless to the lower part of your leg. Yeah. So, you know, it kind of... changes the game for you. And speaking of changing the game, Mike Tolbert is a fullback. There's not a lot of fullbacks in the NFL, but I bring up Mike Tolbert because of his injury and where he is right now. with a groin injury. Jerry McNamara got one finishing up his time at Syracuse. They said that it affected him when he was working out for teams. He had this nagging groin injury that just kept on. Mike Tolbert, he's a bigger guy. He's got a groin injury. He's probably the equivalent of if Jerry McNamara ate himself twice. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's different body types, but what is the groin injury? How do you see it commonly happen when it comes to football? And why does it take so long? Because, I mean, any gentleman can tell you that if you hurt yourself in the groin area, it's not pleasant, it's not fun, but a groin injury seems to be more of an issue now, or maybe it's discussed more now, but I feel like within the last 10 years, when I see groin injury, I'm more concerned for the player than I was in the past of how long it's going to take them.
I don't think it's more common. I think a lot of them we're just seeing are in the media more. So with the groin, usually it's muscular. We're talking about the muscles in the inner side of the leg are strained. So that's probably what it is. Your more concerning ones are if they have a hernia or a partial hernia coming on from maybe lifting or exerting themselves too much pressure down there. Those are the ones that could really affect them. Most of the time, though, it's muscular. And, yeah, I think if you're sitting there and the inside of your leg is sore and the muscles are hurt, just a simple thing of dropping your leg out to the side, putting a little bit of stretch on that muscle, they're very small muscles in there. They're going to be under a lot of tension, a lot of stress. So that's why they're just very hard to rehab and heal, just because of the location of them. And a lot of it comes from the strength of their leg. If they go to cut and they're pulling and pushing off, you've got a lot of force going in one direction, and that one leg gets left to drag behind and going out towards the side and stretching out that middle part of the leg, and that's when that happens a lot. So it's just because you've got so many big muscles surrounding it that are putting a lot of stress on that little area. And so that's why they can end up being pretty severe, just because of the surrounding muscle mass that's acting against it.
What can you do for a groin injury in the middle of your season? Yes. Knowing that you're lifting, you're practicing, you're doing, mm-hmm. how can you minimize the detrimental effect of a groin injury?
Yeah, so keeping flexible, making sure you're working with your trainers to stay loose, to stay warm. You know, using therapies to from speed healing of the muscle, whether it's ice, heat, ultrasound, laser therapy is becoming a lot more popular, just to stimulate healing in the area. So that's the biggest thing you're going to want to do is promote healing. Make sure you've got proper length of all the surrounding muscles, especially the hamstrings. You'll see a lot of times players will have very tight, it's called an adductor, your groin. And so you'll have to work with your trainers to make sure that those are loose and your hamstrings are loose as you progress through. And just like any other injury, make sure that it's feeling good. You can do all the motions that you need to do, those side to side, those cutting motions, without any pain.
That coming from Dr. Tim Whiting, Wellness with Whiting, here with Dan Tortora, the voice that you're hearing right now on Wake Up Call with Dan Tortora's homepage, wakeupcalldt.com, app, wakeupcalldt.podbean.com/mobiles, where you can get it, and Wake Up Call with Dan Tortora on iTunes. We'll take a step aside. We'll come back, going through that depth chart for fantasy football owners, NFL lovers, and sports fans, and for people in general. When we're talking about the calf injuries, the rib injuries, the hip injuries, the back, the shoulder, the concussion, all of these injuries that are affecting people that are in the NFL, that are obviously paid attention to by fantasy football. If you hated the NFL, you hated fantasy football, you hate sports in general, you still are going to grab something from this, because the injuries suffered on the field are the same injuries that are suffered in life itself. So that's the beauty of Wellness with Whiting. We're talking about NFL players, but at the end of the day, these are injuries that can affect you, and the information that we give you on this show is only to help and only to get that rehab to be sooner, better, and to make sure that you're taking care of yourself, because at the end of the day, that's what your family members care about. We'll be back here with Wellness with Whiting in just a minute.
This is Dr. Tim Whiting of Sterp Chiropractic and Wellness Center. Here at Sterp Chiropractic, we strive to provide our patients with the highest quality of care in a comforting and welcoming atmosphere. We are not simply pain doctors. We spend time looking at the whole body and address each patient's needs and goals. This usually includes chiropractic adjustments, muscle work, and tips on nutrition and supplementation that fits each patient's needs. We want to develop a plan that promotes overall health and wellness and focuses on future injury prevention. Our office is located at 1628 West Genesee Street in Syracuse. Please give us a call at 315-472-7128 with any of your chiropractic or wellness needs.
Back here on Wellness with Whiting, I'm Dan Tortora alongside my partner here, Dr. Tim Whiting, who is of Stirp Chiropractic and Wellness Center. You can get him at 315-472-7128. That's 315-472-7128. You can call that number at any time. If it's not normal business hours and you're calling on the weekends as well, make sure you call, leave a message. Don't think, I'll give a call this day or I'll do that. If you're feeling the pain, you need to come in, 315-472-7128. Don't wait, just call, 472-7128 in that 315 area code of Central New York. Dr. Tim Whiting of Stirp Chiropractic and Wellness Center is here with me to talk wellness with Whiting, our way of discussing the teams you love, the players you love, and for fantasy football owners to get their fix as well. But above all things, coming at this from all different angles, there is the one central message, which is helping people get better, get stronger, and be healthier. To continue on our conversation, Alshon Jeffrey, wide receiver for the Chicago Bears, hamstring injury. Certain players are affected by this in different ways. Fred Taylor was never the same after his hamstring injury with the Jaguars as a running back. Alshon Jeffrey, as the phone rings here in studio, will continue here. If it's one of you listening in, call back later. But Alshon Jeffrey, wide receiver, hamstring injury. What would you say to a wide receiver when they initially have their hamstring injury? When the initial prognosis is, you've hurt your hamstring, we're going to need some time to work on this. Because we see the first time hamstring shows up on the injury report and a guy's questionable, he'll play for 2 or 3 weeks, and then he's out for the rest of the year. That'll happen. Sometimes it's he'll play, then he doesn't, then he plays, then he doesn't. Mm-hmm. What is it with a hamstring injury that it is this seesaw of maybe we'll have Alshon this week, but we won't have him next week, or we'll have him for 2 weeks, but we won't have him for four. Mm-hmm. The hamstring injury and how dicey this is in the NFL.
Yeah, you see a lot of times with your receivers and your running backs more than anything. The problem is that their quads, the front part of the legs, are so strong that when they're contracting to push off to get that power, their hamstring doesn't have enough time to elongate, to lengthen. And so what happens is you put a lot of strain on that, and the muscle will get these little tears in it, these strains in them. So it's tough to tell people to not work on their speed and not work on their strength of their quads, because that's what gives them their power as they go. Yeah. So a lot of times it's an imbalance between the front and back of their leg. It can also be an issue with the joints in the area going from the foot, the ankle, knee, all the way up to the low back and the pelvis. You'll see that, the hamstring crosses two joints, the low back as it connects to your pelvis and the knee joint. So making sure that those areas are lined up properly, and that's where chiropractors come in hand, making sure that all those joints are working and moving properly, because if they're not, you're putting excess strain on maybe those surrounding areas. So a lot of times the muscle gets focused on, and it takes time to see, can they come back this week? How are they feeling after 2 days? How are they feeling after 3 days? All right, now let's get them running. Let's get them moving, and as they work through their therapies, as we talked about last time, kind of the progression of what we should do with them. Everyone's going to be different to how fast they respond, and they might be good at a week. They might feel good. They have no pain. They feel pretty loose, and they go out there and they re-injure it, because where they had that injury before heals a little bit weaker. It's never going to be 100% again, so you might be re-injuring the same area just based on the fact that it's a little bit weaker than it was before. But I'd like to make sure that those teams are addressing everything else, making sure that their foot and their ankle, their knee and low back are in line, so that that hamstring has the best biomechanical space to work in.
Two final questions here on this episode of Wellness with Whiting. I want to talk about ribs. Joe Hayden, cornerback for the Cleveland Browns, had a rib contusion. That puts him on the list as questionable. Everybody remembers the story, whether you love him or hate him, love the team or hate the team, Tony Romo, cracked rib and a punctured lung and played the rest of the game with it. What are we working with when we're working with ribs? Because Jay Ajayi, Miami Dolphins rookie running back, he had multiple broken ribs. He hasn't played a game. We have rib contusion with Joe Hayden. We have the Tony Romo days of a broken rib and a punctured lung, and somehow he's breathing and playing football. So looking at those three examples, what can you say about rib injuries?
Yeah. So fractures, worst case scenario. Fracture with punctured lung is worst case scenario. Any kind of time you hit an organ. So at the time, he may have not noticed anything. He probably had some local soreness over the area, continued the game, and then turns out later he's getting shortness of breath. They check him out and figured out he punctured the lung. So it is possible to play through these injuries. What they're advising them is to not play through, especially broken ribs, as you can further injure things. You have those risks of puncturing organs as they surround all of your vital organs. So that's the risk that they don't want with a fracture, is to lead to further injuries. As far as a contusion, all that means is basically a bruise. It's a bone bruise. So,
okay,
you know, you've bruised some of the area. You're not 100%. It hurts to do certain motions probably. And they don't want them to get hit in there and have this progressive. Imagine if you had a bruise and you constantly hit it over and over again. Probably next week he'll be wearing an extra little rib protector to make sure that the area is better, but he should be back soon with just a contusion, as long as they can get that to heal.
Final question, quarterbacks. Ankle injuries are nagging for wide receivers, and like in the case, like I said, Julio Jones, Roddy White will take you out. Ankle injuries, toe injury, Devin Hester, he's been out. What is it about a quarterback that when they hurt their toe and their ankle, somehow, some way, I feel like we're more apt to see a quarterback play than we are to see a wide receiver or a running back in that scenario. What would you attribute that to, that a quarterback can play through toe and ankle injuries better in certain cases?
He can settle for being a little more rigid. He doesn't have to be as mobile. He's not putting as much force on them, taking off. You may just lose the scramble part of his game. You may not be able to get away as fast without, you know, hurting
yourself. So standing in the pocket.
Yeah, standing in the pocket, you know, being able just to bounce around and stuff without having to run down the field and putting a lot of tension and stress on that, those ankle and knee joints is why they can do it. They get a little more protection. They can get rid of the ball if they need to. They don't really have to run.
That coming from Dr. Tim Whiting of Stirp Chiropractic and Wellness Center in Central New York. You want to get in touch with him, 315-472-7128. Not only a chiropractor, but overall sense of wellness, as you can see from this show and the ones before it. Make sure you listen in on the team page of wakeupcalldt.com. If you go to the team tab that's right next to the home tab, you just go down to Dr. Tim Whiting, chiropractor, and you will not only get all the episodes of Wellness with Whiting, you will also get a test to see if you're as smart as Dr. Tim Whiting of Stirp Chiropractic and Wellness Center. You'll be able to listen to tips that can help you all throughout your life. At any given time, you can listen to tips on dehydration, on why fad diets don't work, as well as ACL injuries, ankle injuries, and more coming up. And you can get the Fantasy Football Injury Report along with our interactive analysis that you heard today. So, for all of that, for all the hard work that he does, and for how much he cares about the Central New York community and abroad, for Dr. Tim Whiting, this is Dan Tortora. Wellness with Whiting only airs on wakeupcalldt.com, the Wake Up Call DT free app, and Wake Up Call with Dan Tortora on iTunes. Tim, thank you so much as always.
Thank you for having me.